This is a People First Radio podcast.
The Canadian Center on Substance Use and Addiction has put together a guide to help leaders in small cities address substance use-related harms. The Small Cities Playbook for Action provides examples of more than 50 different interventions intended to address substance use harms from different angles, including prevention, harm reduction, treatment, housing supports, and policing-related interventions. The playbook is accompanied by an implementation guide to offer community leaders a pathway to identify what might work in their specific communities. I spoke with a member of the team behind the guide about how they came up with this roadmap for smaller cities.
My name is Chandni Sandagar. I'm a senior knowledge broker with the Canadian Center on Substance Use and Addiction. For those of you listening who might not be familiar with who we are, commonly called CCSA, we are an NGO, a non-governmental organization that was created by an act of parliament to provide leadership on issues related to substance use.
And this year you have come out with a playbook for action for small cities dealing with the substance use crisis. Maybe just to get started in this context, what does small city mean?
Yeah, and that's a fantastic question. And it was something that we even kind of discussed at our organization of how we were going to define small cities. So for the purpose of our initiative, the Small Cities Initiative, we actually define small cities as communities of having population about 150,000 or less, to really create like a geographical map and a population map of what that community would look like.
And you're talking about Canada's substance use crisis. In the context of this strategy, what does that mean? Help me understand the term substance use crisis.
Yeah, happy to do so. So when we think about substance use crisis, we have to recognize that this is an incredibly complex issue when we think about the challenges that the country is facing, but the communities themselves, right? So we think about the rising overdose deaths that we're seeing across the country, the increase in public consumption, as well as the emergence of encampments, as well as the evolving and unpredictable drug supply that continues to shift and change, and the implications that this is truly having in communities, but across the country, and the infrastructural strains that this is having. But we also have to recognize that substance use itself doesn't exist in a vacuum. This, in fact, intersects with a number of other crises. So we think about housing, we think about homelessness, we think about public safety, community safety. We also think about mental health as well as chronic pain. So there's a number of challenges that intersect when we think about the substance use crisis that Canada is facing.
And you've talked about this idea of risk and protective factors as far as both like on the individual level and on the community level of how likely someone is to experience substance use harms. Could you talk to me about that idea of like risk and protective factors and what they look like in small cities?
Yes, absolutely. So when we're talking about risk and protective factors, we're talking about a couple of things here. So risk factors are things that can increase an individual or community's risk to experiencing harms and in relation to substance use, harms related to substance use. And protective factors are those things that can help to protect against those harms. So when you think about an individual, right, we're thinking about the risk factors that could really increase their risk for developing a substance use disorder or even mental health harms or substance-related harms in general. So these could be things like trauma, thinking about adverse childhood experiences, social pressures, as well as just disease and biological predispositions. And then when we think about those protective factors for those individuals, we think about what are those pieces or factors that an individual can benefit from in order to reduce those kinds of risks. So these could be things like having a supporting of a family and friend network. It could be having positive coping skills. It could be including being able to develop those resiliency skills as well when it comes to responding to some of these challenges that might be inflicted because of trauma or through adverse childhood events. And we think about this from the course of the community, we think about this as a whole, right? So we think about the structure that the community falls within and that ecosystem that exists in. So we think about how easy is it for communities or members of those communities to be able to actually access services across the continuum of care, right? What are employment opportunities? Are there employment opportunities? What do those look like? When we think about youth in our community, those are things like after school programs or different activities that engage them. And then we think about those protective factors, right? We want to identify things that allow them to have those access to those services that allow them to truly be able to hone in and be able to build those resilience skills. And then when you think about those risk factors, right? Like how accessible are substances for communities? Are there employment opportunities? So those are some of the things that we think about when we think about for a community as a whole.
And what are some of the things that you're recommending communities can do to take action and try and address some of the harms that could be impacting people related to substance use?
Yeah, and so that's a great question. And I think what I want to begin with is that when we're trying to deal with something so complex like substance-related challenges and the intersections that it falls within other crises, it's really important to understand that it's not going to be a single solution that's going to solve this crisis. And that is why we've developed the Playbook for Action, right? This resource has really been developed to better help communities understand what are evidence-based approaches they could be considering for implementation for their communities, recognizing that each community experiences unique challenges, whether that's through the design of their infrastructure, whether that is through the challenges that they have in terms of accessing services, the geographical differences, especially if you are a region that could be quite sparse but have all your services locally in a central hub, or maybe you're a community that doesn't have services but needs to lean into other communities or neighboring communities to be able to access those services. So I wouldn't say that there is one single solution to this. I think it's really important to be able to understand what are the unique challenges a community is facing, what are the kinds of assets a community already has, and how can that be bolstered, and what are other areas that there are gaps that could be filled. And the Playbook for Action has over 50 evidence-based interventions that a community could draw from and then consider to adapt and include for implementation within their communities.
Now, a lot of the higher level things that could be done to address some of the harms for what is essentially a health issue are fall under the purview of the provincial government, the federal government, governments that have a lot more resources perhaps to deal with some of these issues. When it comes to making a playbook for municipalities themselves to try and lead on these, how do you balance the fact that they're going to have somewhat limited resources and maybe things like healthcare aren't really viewed as traditionally in their purview?
No, and that's a fantastic question, right? And it's absolutely true. Like when we think about health, it doesn't fall within the purview of municipalities. That largely sits within the provinces. But with that being said, that doesn't mean that municipalities are powerless. They have a number of levers that they could be leaning on. So when we think about what it is that communities can do and what municipalities can do, it's things like developing a community safety and well-being plan, for example, or developing a substance use response strategy. There are also a number of other things that municipalities can be doing to support a response. This could also be things like offering community spaces to organizations that offer different services or social services and health supports, being able to bring together partners. Municipalities are incredibly tangible in being able to and resource to be able to bring together different sectors and bring together partners to have conversations and really promote this level of cross-sectoral collaboration, as well as to promote this more coordinated response. And other things that I think about is just even advocating. So municipalities can really be able to lean in on that and being able to advocate for what their community needs are, working with and alongside the provinces and federally, as well as other organizations and sectors that exist within their communities.
Could you walk me through maybe what some concrete examples of what you just described could look like in terms of a municipality's ability to bring together different players in the community? What kinds of groups could they be bringing together and to do what?
Yeah, no, and that's a fantastic question. So when we think about this cross-sectoral collaboration, right, I think it's important to think about what kind of resources we have in the community and the challenges that community is trying to address. So I want to reflect on a community that we've been having some great conversations with in Ontario. And they've been having to they're really trying to better understand what they could be doing to support and respond to the challenges around housing and chronic homelessness in their community. So it was really interesting to see how this municipality were able to bring in different sectors. So that included the private sector that were folks that were builders and developers within their community. They also brought in religious groups. They also brought in different community organizations, community-based organizations that support housing. And what they were able to do was develop collectively a strategy for what a response would look like, but also investment for the community. And as a result of the work that they've done, they're now actually on track to eliminating chronic homelessness by 2027. So this is an example of what it could look like when you bring together different sectors and bring together folks around a shared vision for a more coordinated response.
What municipality is that you're talking about in Ontario?
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to share. So this is St. Thomas. It's a small municipality in Ontario.
Near London for folks, right?
That's correct.
How would you respond to a reluctance from municipal leaders? It's something I've certainly heard the mayor talk about during council meetings in Nanaimo, a reluctance to commit to significant intervention that would require spending a lot of municipal funds on things that they feel like are the provincial government's job to do, with a fear that the provincial government would say, hey, they're spending money on this. They've decided that they're going to take control of this and we're going to spend our money elsewhere, maybe.
Yeah, so these are things that we've heard from a number of municipalities. So I think the challenge really becomes and really understanding what is within the purview of municipalities, what is within the purview of the provinces, but also understanding where is that handover and where is that alignment. And often what we've seen is that some of these communities can be working in silos with their provinces, right? And being able to truly be able to paint and define what is within the purview of municipalities, but also where those levers that can be pulled. And if it is in fact a provincial issue or if it's a municipal issue, how can we be working more collaboratively together? So it's a very tricky question in the sense of it's a challenge that I think a lot of communities are facing and really trying to understand how we can create this more collective response and collaboration.
In the Small Cities Playbook, you also introduce this idea of substance use health. And really what I took away from that, it's the idea of thinking more about substance use health as more of a continuum as opposed to like a light switch where there's a problem or not. I'm wondering if you can tell me about that in this context.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we speak of substance use health, and I do want to note that this was a term that was actually developed by CAPSA and introduced by CAPSA. And what it really describes is the idea that we all exist on this continuum, right? And our experiences with substance use also exist on this continuum between no use, as well as recognizing that there are risks and benefits to substance use as we progress in our use or move between our different uses. And it also recognizes that when we think about substance use health, that folks can actually be moving across, along the continuum at different points in their life. And this can actually vary from substance to substance.
This is People First Radio. I'm speaking with Chandni Sondagar. She's a senior knowledge broker with the Canadian Centre on Substance Use and Addiction. Right now we're talking about the organization's Playbook for Action, a document that contains a number of interventions small cities could implement to address substance use-related harms from a number of different angles, including harm reduction, prevention, treatment, housing supports, and policing-related interventions. And you also mention in the playbook that poorly managed pain is a key driver of substance use in Canada, and that people living with chronic pain, especially in smaller communities, can feel unsupported or left with few alternatives to opioid use. I'm wondering if you could tell me a little more about that idea.
Yeah, so we know that pain, and especially chronic pain that goes uncared for, can be incredibly challenging for those individuals who are suffering from this. And this becomes quite complex because folks are turning to substances that can allow them to experience like a relief from that level of pain. So when we think about the complexity of this and the work that happens in this field, we think about the implications that this has, right? It communities and especially those individuals that don't feel like that they're getting access to the services that they need or the supports they need are at higher risk of developing substance use disorders or experiencing other challenges. And it becomes quite complex when we think about that relationship. So I think what's important is that when we think about why people are using substances, to really be able to tailor our responses and supports and the types of services we offer in a way that truly meets them, their needs.
And in the playbook, you have broken up the interventions into six different categories, and each category has a number of different interventions that a municipality could look at implementing. How do you think you would frame this to someone who maybe looks at the list and says, wow, there's a lot there. If my community isn't already doing a bunch of these things, it could seem like intimidating to know how to prioritize which of these things to prioritize, and the idea of like being able to do them all, or even to do a broad swath of them from all the different sections. It seems like a lot. How would you recommend someone who works in a municipality or who's a municipal leader who's been tasked with addressing substance use harms start to tackle the problem on one of the, any one or all of these six areas?
So when you look at the playbook, like you said, there are six large buckets or categories in which these interventions fall under. And we did that so because we wanted to really demonstrate the broad nature and the spectrum in which interventions can lie. And so what you'll see in the playbook is we have interventions that are far upstream, thinking about like upstream health, thinking about health promotion, education, harm reduction, treatment, recovery. And I do also want to recognize that, again, we know that substance use is quite complex. It doesn't exist in a vacuum and intersects with a number of other crises. So you'll see that there are other categories in here that really allow folks to be able to see that. Where we have categories around housing and employment, public safety, as well as community and cultural supports. So to answer your question, yes, absolutely. This is incredibly overwhelming when you look at this list of over 50 interventions. So where I'd recommend a community start is actually with our implementation guide. So the implementation guide is a companion resource that we developed, that really sits with the playbook for action. And it essentially walks communities through this step-by-step process of understanding how they would go about identifying based on what their community needs are, doing a community needs assessment, understanding what their local challenges are, what kind of assets and resources that they have, and what their priorities are, to then determine which of the interventions from this playbook their community could consider for implementation. And like you were saying, some communities might already be doing some of this, but it could also then prompt conversations about, is this truly meeting our needs? Is where are the gaps? Can things be bolstered? What is working and what isn't working?
What kind of a response have you had from different small municipalities in Canada to the guide? Are folks using this? Have you seen it make a difference so far?
Yeah, no. So we were quite thrilled that this has been 2 years in the making in terms of the Small States Initiative, and we have just recently launched the playbook and implementation guide only a couple of months ago. But even then, we still have been having conversations with a number of municipalities. It's been received really positively. People see this as a tangible resource that they can turn to that's grounded in evidence to provide guidance and support the conversations that they're having in communities. In terms of some of the communities that we've engaged with, I'd like to talk about one community in particular, in Ontario, where West Nipissing, where they're actually having conversations about how they can be taking the playbook for action and integrated in their next update of their community well-being and safety planning. We also are chatting with communities that are recently been funded, to look at the Icelandic prevention model and have gone through the process of actually, assessing the community data and are now at the point of understanding, like, okay, what can we do now? What are our options? And are now turning to the playbook to determine what are some of those interventions that they could be considering for implementation.
We're coming up to municipal elections here in BC in just a couple of months. What would you suggest is the role for people interested in running for their local city council in their smaller city or even the mayor? What do you think this resource can do for them? How do you think councillors and mayors and prospective councillors and mayors can use this?
Yeah, so when I think about what this playbook is really meant to be, right, it's really meant to be this tangible tool that communities can use. We recognize that, municipalities aren't necessarily experts when it comes to substance use health, but this tool really can help them arm to have some of those conversations with their communities and with their constituents around the real challenges that these communities are faced with, and as well as approaches that their communities could be considering, and being able to really start that dialogue and conversation to be able to determine what could a response look like and understand what are those community needs.
How are you going to evaluate success for this resource a couple years down the road?
That is a great question because we are currently in that process now. So now that we've launched both the resources, our team has been really working to think about what does success look like for us. And for us, really in the short term, is actually seeing folks using this resource. And what we also recognize is that it's all well and good to have both these resources, but the other piece of this that we need to continue to build on is how folks can actually tangibly put this into practice. So a lot of the work that we're going to be focusing on in the next year or so is identifying ways that we can create the conditions that would allow communities to be able to be successful in actually implementing this and putting it into practice for those that want to do this work. So some of the things that we're actually going to be putting together is a coaching network where we're putting together, bringing together subject matter experts from across the country that have experience in actually implementing interventions from the playbook, who can now be really a source of resource, as a mentor, as a coach, to help communities walk through the process of actually implementing the interventions, but also navigating the political climate, right? It can be quite challenging, and being able to have someone who can walk you through that process. And as part of this work, we're also looking and have developed education and training through our National Learning Center, where we're trying to really support communities to better understand what substance use health is, explore different substance-related topics, as well as bring to light different interventions and programs that are being implemented across the country.
Is there anything else you think it's important to let people know about the playbook?
When I think about the playbook and implementation guide, this really is meant to be a tool and a resource. And I think about the role that municipalities can play, right? This is a complex issue that municipalities are truly on the front lines for. But what I really want to reiterate is that communities aren't powerless. There are levers that they can be pulling on, and the playbook and guide can be a great resource as they embark on their process to understand what a response looks like. And here at CCSA, we're more than happy to support. So if communities do want to learn more, I do encourage you to reach out to us. We'd be more than happy to have a conversation to see what we could do to support your community.
Well, Chandni, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Chandni Sondagar is a senior knowledge broker with the Canadian Centre on Substance Use and Addiction. We were talking about the organization's Playbook for Action, a document containing a number of interventions small cities could implement to address various substance use related harms.
People First Radio, People First Media, and People First Stories are community media projects of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and are produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast, podcast, and social media partners.